Case for argument is 16-1143. Cisco Systems versus Cyrix System. If I had one, right. Let's wait for everyone to get settled here. All right, we've got a cross appeal here, so we've got split time on both sides, so we're going to try to hold to it if we can. Mr. McCombs?
Yes, Your Honors. May it please the Court, on the record, I'm David McCombs here for Cisco Systems. In Cisco's appeal, the claims in question recite a planar light guide circuit that equalizes or discretely attenuates light energy that's traveling in its optical paths. The Board erred in finding written description support for these claims because the patent never describes how these functions are performed in the planar light guide circuit, or PLC. Recognizing
this... Is that an enablement argument?
This is a written description.
Right, but when you say that the patent doesn't describe how it's being done, I guess I'm trying to figure out, does that mean what you're actually arguing an enablement argument?
Your Honor, I'm arguing possession of the invention.
Okay.
And recognizing this lack of written description, during reexamination, the patent owner proposed a hypothetical example that was not disclosed. It was not part of the specification to illustrate how these claim functions could be met using components outside the PLC. And in order for this example to fit within the scope of the claims, the Board stretched the construction to broadly cover the situation where an external diverting element would be used to perform the functions, not by operation of the PLC.
Well, the written description question is entirely a question of fact, right? Written description.
Yes, Your Honor. But
and here we've got substantial... I mean, the question is therefore correct if there's substantial evidence to support the PTAB's conclusions and findings on a question of fact, right?
Yes, Your Honor. What we have, though, is we have a claim construction error that led to this written description issue. There's a distorted claim construction.
Did the Board make explicit claim construction a finding, or was this a sort of an implicit claim construction?
The Board was specific, Your Honor, in the sense that the Board said that it applied this hypothetical embodiment, this hypothetical disclosure of this drop leg hypothetical to support the concept that the claims were broad enough so that they could cover the situation where these external elements outside the PLC would be used to perform the function.
And which external elements are you talking about?
This would be the diverting element that would be used. It's external to the planar light guide circuit, and the diverting element was used...
When you say diverting element, do you mean the gain flattening elements?
No, this would be the diverting elements that is referred to in Figure 10 of the patent. And it was this diverting element that would be used to redirect an extra signal, lambda 3 prime, back into the PLC that would be used to arguably provide the function of equalizing or
right. And my understanding is the Board relied on a particular statement in column 15, which pointed out that the attenuating material could be, instead of outside the PLC, it could be inserted inside the PLC, right?
Yes, Your Honor, and the specific portion of the specification that you're referring to, what it says there is, and I quote, that the attenuation material may be included to discretely attenuate or equalize the light traveling in the optical paths as another approach. But, Your Honor, there's never a statement in the specification that says that this approach would even provide for equalization or specifically for discrete attenuation. It's referred to as another approach without any discussion of exactly what that would accomplish. And the Board finds 112 support for that only by a stretched claim construction that looks beyond the PLC to the diverting element to perform these functions. And what we have here, Your Honors, is a situation of envisioning how one might rewrite the disclosure to fit the claims that were drafted years later in reexamination. What we don't have is something that's pointing to any possession of the invention. The hypothetical, it goes way too far in many respects.
What's your conception of what the invention is when you say that this claim or the inventors lack possession of this claimed invention? Right? Is it your understanding, just so we're all on the same page,
yes.
The invention is some kind of wavelength-by-wavelength attenuation in
yes.
order to equalize and fine-tune the various light intensities among all the different wavelengths?
Yes, Your Honor. If you look at the specific language of Claim 56, for example, it says the planar light guide circuit is operative to equalize the light traveling in its optical path. So you have a multiplexed signal that's going into
The claim itself doesn't really speak in terms of equalizing wavelength by wavelength.
It says that it's operative to equalize the light traveling in the optical path. So the light traveling in the optical paths has to be equalized within itself. There's a multiplex signal.
Right. So as I understand what the board said and did was you put the attenuating material inside the PLC, then all the wavelengths that are together inside the PLC, they'll all get attenuated at the same rate, right? And then a new wavelength will enter the PLC, and that wavelength will be already at the same intensity level of the now attenuated collection of wavelengths that were previously in the PLC. Am I correct in understanding the board's understanding of how there would be possession?
Your Honor, that is a correct statement, but that is not described in the patent specification. What was described, and again, what the board is doing, or what the board did there, was they're talking about equalizing by referring to this extended spectral range that then would be made compatible with some other signal that's later brought in, this lambda 3 prime signal. That's not performing equalizing by operation of the PLC. That's performing operation by use of this external diverting element and it not occurring within the PLC. All of the light that is within the PLC is equalized in a collective fashion. There's no equalization of the discrete channels. And so what we have here is a situation where there is no possession of the invention as it relates to how, by operation of the PLC, you would equalize light energy in the PLC.
So what's your understanding, then, of what the patent was talking about when it talked about, in the same paragraph, about equalization and attenuating light intensity? What was it getting at when it was talking about how you can put the attenuating material in the PLC?
Yes, so in that description that's pertaining to Figure 13, of course, the attenuation material was described initially to be outside of the PLC, and to the extent that you would put the attenuation material inside the PLC, there may be adjustments, but that would not particularly that would not provide for equalization, because if you had three channels, all of which were at different intensities, it might lower them all or raise them all, but it would not equalize them. So within the PLC, that was not a possibility, because the possession of the invention was not described. The technical solution of how would you within the PLC demultiplex that light so that you could manipulate each channel separately, that was never part of the disclosure. That's a completely different technical solution than what was proposed in the patent, and how you might do that externally through what was described in Figure 13. And that invention of how you would do that by the PLC, that was not in possession of the inventor at the time. Now, that led to a framing error as well in the way the claims were framed. And what I mean by that is what the board did, and the board never said that the key concept of this invention, of doing this within the PLC, the board never said that was shown as being directly in possession and a description. What the board did always retreated to this diverting element hypothetical to perform that function. But the framing error here is that by doing so, the full scope of the claim, the full breadth of the claim, even if it did include that hypothetical, the core concept of the claim was also to have the PLC itself perform this function. That there was never possession of that invention. There was never a specific technical solution that was described to perform that. And so
what is the best case that you think really drives home and supports your understanding? If, for example, there is an embodiment that is within the scope of the claim as construed that meets the limitations of the claim, but then there's another embodiment disclosed in the spec that if you put it, you wouldn't really be able to put it into the claim. And a version of it that would fit in the claim is just not disclosed.
I think, Your Honor, the Lizard Tech case is applicable. The Lizard Tech case had to do with compression algorithms, and in that case there was a very specific solution of how to create the compression algorithm to work in a certain way. And there was a very specific embodiment for that. The claim then extended way beyond that and arguably would sweep in and cover other implementations, none of which were disclosed. And like this case, in that case, from a policy standpoint, any later developed solution would cover that broader invention, but without any disclosure for that. And so that would be ensnared by the claims, and that would be improper under the quid pro quo for the patent bargain, where to not have a disclosure for that, yet still have claims that would cover it.
All right. You're into your rebuttal, so why don't we hear from a friend on the other side?
Thank you, Your Honor.
What's left. Thank you. Hello.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Tarek Fahmy. I'm here on behalf of Syrix, the cross-appellant, and may it please the Court. In contesting the Board's affirmance of Claims 56 et al., Cisco basically makes or relies upon 3 points. First, they say the Board erred by relying on an improper hypothetical implementation of what was claimed. Second, they say the Board somehow improperly construed the claims. And third, they say the Board erred in applying the law regarding written description. Cisco is wrong on all of these points, and they're also wrong with respect to their argument concerning Claim 57 when they say the Board should not have found adequate support for the discrete attenuation limitation that appears in that claim.
What does discrete attenuation mean to you?
Discrete attenuation.
After reading this patent, discrete attenuation to me means doing an attenuation wavelength by wavelength.
Not exactly, Your Honor, although
but
it
what,
could
what,
be.
What other, if we don't read it that way, then there's really no work for the word discrete in the phrase discrete attenuation.
It need not be limited to single wavelengths, Your Honor. It's discrete spectral regions.
So it could be packets.
Exactly. It could be multiple wavelengths across a spectral region as defined from other wavelengths in a different spectrum.
But it certainly can't be attenuating everything.
I would agree with you. It can't be attenuating everything.
Right. And so that's the concern here, is that what we have going on in your proposed embodiment that's not specifically disclosed in the spec is reliant on attenuation material inside the PLC that is attenuating everything, all the wavelengths inside that PLC at the same time, at the same rate, regardless of what the relative light intensities are of each of those individual wavelengths. And then in order for you to make the argument that there's not attenuation of everything, is you argue that the introduction of another wavelength after the attenuation occurs, somehow, given that it wasn't attenuated, results in so-called discrete attenuation. Am I understanding your argument?
Well, I think you have all of the essential points there, Your Honor, but I would take some issue with the way you started and suggest that the test of sufficiency is not merely the words on the page as they exist in the specification. The test of sufficiency is what the specification, in it through its four corners, reasonably discloses to the person of ordinary skill.
But you didn't have any expert testimony about that, did you? You didn't offer any expert testimony about that.
There was expert testimony below, Your Honor. I don't recall specifically whether it was on this point. However, I don't even think you need
Did you have an expert?
There was expert testimony introduced by the patent owner, Your Honor,
okay.
Yes.
But you don't know whether there's any expert testimony on that point.
I simply don't recall whether it was on this point or not. But the board
don't you think that's a relevant question if the determination is based on what one skilled in the art would have understood?
I think it could be. However, the testimony of an expert can't stray from what is fairly disclosed in the specification as
Yeah, but we don't know whether it's fairly disclosed in the specification because you're combining these two figures and doing something more. So it's not exactly disclosed in the spec, and your defense to that is to say, well, one skilled in the art would have been able to do this.
Actually,
that's not apparent from the face of the spec either.
I suggest that it is apparent on the face of the patent, and it was so found by both the reexamination examiner and by the board. And earlier you looked at the passage from column 15 that discussed the attenuation material in the PLC. In the next immediate paragraph, there is discussion of what led the board to conclude that the add drop hypothetical that was introduced by the patent owner would lead the person of ordinary skill to understand that that was disclosed.
And that's discrete channel?
Correct, Your Honor. That is the discrete attenuation limitation.
But you know, that paragraph makes a point about distinguishing discrete channel treatment versus collective channel treatment. And when you're inside the PLC and you're adding attenuation material in there, you're necessarily doing a collective channel approach, a collective wavelength approach. And so that's the concern I have about, as a logical matter, when you think it through, why would inserting attenuating material inside of the PLC produce this fine-tuning wavelength by wavelength type equalization and attenuation? It wouldn't. So that's the concern I have.
Well, it would for whatever wavelengths are in the PLC at that point. It would attenuate them equally. And if they were all...
It would attenuate all of them,
yes.
Right? But equalization, you're not suggesting that equalization in these claims in this patent suggest attenuating everything equally. The whole point of this patent is fine-tuning a variety of light intensity across a series of wavelengths so that you even them out, you equalize the light intensity across all of those so that they're all equal of equal intensity, not attenuating them at the same equal rate.
Well, I agree with you that the equalization is of the collective whole, but claim 56, for example, does not speak to discrete equalization. It speaks only to equalization of the intensities.
Right. Equalize, as I understand it, is used how many times in this patent? Once. And it's talking about equalizing the signal strength of each channel, right? It's a channel-based equalization where you're trying to have the signal strength be equal for each individual wavelength.
Correct.
Each individual channel. So reading this patent, it's clear that what the inventor conceived of was trying to do this channel-based equalization. That's what column 15 is all about.
I agree.
Now we think about, okay, now you've written some claims many years after the patent's issued that talks about trying to do equalization inside the PLC. But the PLC can't do any type of fine-tuning on a channel-based individualized way. It has to do the attenuation to everything, the entire basket of wavelengths.
I disagree, Your Honor. The attenuation.
This is a core question, really.
It is. But I think what's missing from your analysis, Your Honor, is that you're assuming the attenuation takes place only at one point in the PLC. And there's nothing that suggests that has to be the case. In fact, the attenuation, where exactly in the PLC the attenuation is implied, the board recognized, is not a requirement of the claim. And so attenuating material can be included in the PLC. We know this from column 15. And an example is provided as to how gain flattening elements can be used as attenuators and different gain flattening elements applied to different wavelengths. And so the
Where's that?
That is at the same part of column 15, Your Honor, beginning at line 7. Now, it's discussed in an embodiment.
In a channel-by-channel based way.
Yes.
Right. So you can't achieve that inside the PLC.
No, I disagree, Your Honor. If we look at, for example, figure 13, we see that there is channel-by-channel attenuation.
Now, right, when the attenuators are outside of the PLC.
Yes, in this example. And then immediately in the next phrase in the patent, we're told that that attenuating material, those gain-flattening elements, can be inside the PLC. The person of ordinary skill...
Are we still on column 15?
Yes, Your Honor, column 15. The passage begins at about line 7 and carries through to about line 29 or so.
But you have to agree with me that when you put the attenuating material inside the PLC, that attenuating material is affecting all of the wavelengths inside the PLC in the same way. Unlike figure 13, where now the light has been split into who knows how many wavelengths, let's just say 10 wavelengths, and each of those wavelengths, each of those channels, has its own individualized attenuator. And that's how this invention discloses you can fine-tune the relative light intensity of each and every single one of those individual wavelengths. That's not something that you can accomplish inside the PLC once you stick in some attenuating material. Am I right? At least on that score, am I right?
Your Honor, I don't disagree with your characterization of Claim 13. What I think is missing, however, is the part that recognizes that the attenuation will only be applied to the wavelengths that are incident upon that attenuating material. So adjusting the attenuating material within the PLC to accommodate different intensities would solve the problem that you are posing.
Okay, the time is running out, so why don't we move on to your cross-appeal so that you don't lose all your opportunity to raise that with us.
Thank you, Your Honor. With respect to the claims that are on the cross-appeal, here the failure of the board was to consider the evidence concerning the figure 11 embodiment that was raised by the patent owner below. When the board looked at the specification to decide whether or not sufficient written description existed, it considered the figure 10 embodiment, the figure 13 embodiment, but did not address the patent owner's arguments concerning figure 11. The representative claim was claim 46, and the figure 11 embodiment illustrates or made clear that the diverting elements could be within optical paths, and the entirety of the patent discusses the optical paths being within the PLC. So when considered in connection with figure 11...
There are no optical paths outside the PLC?
The patent does not refer to those paths as optical paths, Your Honor. The only time the optical path is discussed is within the PLC.
So I'm sorry, could you refer us again to the column and line number?
Yes, Your Honor.
That describes, figure 11?
Yes, so it appears several times. First in column 6, lines 21 through 25, we're told that figure 11 is a diagram that illustrates an element in an optical path. Again, we're told at column 14, lines 46 through 51, that figure 11 illustrates the diverting element 1000 within the optical path of a light circuit. We're also told...
But that could refer to an optical path that's either inside or outside a PLC, correct?
Well, the only optical paths, Your Honor, that we're told
well,
about...
Well, can you answer my question? And then you can explain. Is that true, that this could refer to an optical path that's either inside or outside of the PLC?
It's not true, Your Honor. And the reason it's not true is the only optical paths that are described in the patent are those within the PLC. Outside the PLC, there's no reference to those traces being optical paths. So the only time that the optical path is invoked or used in the patent is in the context of being within the PLC, and therefore the disclosure concerning figure 11 would suggest to the person of ordinary skill that it must be discussing the diverting element inside the PLC.
So then you're saying figure 11 is an embodiment devoted exclusively to a diverting element inside the PLC?
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct. And unless there are other questions,
okay,
I can reserve the remaining time.
Okay. Mr. McCombs.
Your Honors,
the opportunity to respond twofold to the appeal.
Thank you, Your Honors. As we just heard from the patent owner, the cross appeal depends upon this court overturning a substantial evidence finding. And here, to the contrary, the board did articulate sufficient evidence that the diverting element is indeed disclosed to be outside the PLC, not within the PLC. And therefore,
and that's right, under figure 11.
Under figure 11, that's correct. And if we look at what figure 11 is, figure 11 and 12 are a discussion of the diverting element that's shown in figure 10. What we have is it's like a mirror that gets inserted and moved in and out, and either in figure 11 you're showing that, in figure 12 you're showing it's either in one of two positions, either one where it is interrupting the light or one where it is not. And this whole figure 11 argument...
About optical path, can you say something about
yeah,
that?
Yeah, so what the argument here hinges on are the words light circuit and this incorrect proposition that the optical path of a light circuit, the only one is inside the planar light guide circuit. But there's clear discussion in the specification when it's discussing figure 10 that the diverting element is configured as an optical cross-connect that is between two optical light circuits, which are clearly outside the PLC. And this idea that you have this general light circuit that is referencing figure 11, that must somehow equate to the planar light guide circuit, that's a false argument. As we do see in column 14, there's a specific discussion at about 14 line 10 and following as to what an optical circuit is and that there can be optical circuits that are outside, that are definitely outside the PLC. And the discussion on figure 11 at column 14 lines 45 and following is just showing that the diverting element to be within the optical path of a light circuit. The light circuit is clearly, as shown in figure 10, to be outside the PLC.
So this patent spec, in your view, uses the phrase light circuit to refer to something different than PLC?
Well, a light circuit can be a light circuit as shown in figure 10, which is outside the PLC, a planar light guide.
PLC a component of a light circuit? Is a PLC a component of a light circuit? Or is a PLC a light circuit?
No, a PLC, a planar light guide circuit, is effectively a piece of glass that light energy is fed into. And there are light circuits, as we see in the figure, in figure 10, that is showing light circuits where you have diverting elements that can feed light energy into the planar light guide circuit.
Right. Everything that I see in figure 10, is that a light circuit, as that term is used in the patent?
Yes, the path showing that it is that diverting element that's outside the PLC, that is a light circuit, correct.
I'm sorry. You're saying the diverting element is a light circuit?
No, the diverting element is outside of the PLC, and it is part of a light circuit.
So the diverting element is part of a light circuit?
That's correct.
And
light
the PLC,
circuit.
Is the PLC a part of a light circuit?
The PLC has optical paths that are part of a light circuit, but there's nothing that could show that that the diverting element could be inside the PLC. There's no disclosure of that, and there was a clear discussion by the board that there was no recitation of that at all.
Where is a light circuit defined?
The light circuit is defined in column 14 at about line 10 and following. It says an optical circuit and introduce a new signal content represented by lambda 3 prime back into the optical circuit. And figure 11, continuing at column 14, lines 45 and following, figure 11 illustrates the diverting element within the optical path of a light circuit. So the light circuit would be, if you look at the figures and you look at what's shown in figure 10, you'll see...
I hate to belabor this, but the first part of column 14 references an optical circuit. The second part of column 14 you references a light circuit. Are you saying optical circuit and a light circuit are the same thing?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so you're saying these patents use those phrases interchangeably?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, final point?
My final point is that there is also a waiver, Your Honors, of the argument with regard to the indefiniteness rejection. There were two rejections, written description and indefiniteness. And with regard to indefiniteness, the claims were found indefinite because there was no clear statement of how you could feed light energy into the PLC as required by Claim 1 when these rejected claims recited that the diverting element was already inside the PLC. And for this logical disconnect, the patent owner provided no traversal at all with regard to that other than to rely on the fact that there was a written description a rejection that was not satisfied.
If we disagree with you and find that the patent does not use optical circuit and light circuit synonymously, do your arguments fail?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because I think it's very clear from Figure 10 that you see what is a light circuit and a diverting element that is shown clearly in Figure 10 to be outside the planar light guide circuit.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
To even things out, we'll give you another 2 minutes, so a total of 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. With respect to the claims...
Within the patent, optical circuit and light circuit, the same thing?
They're not the same thing, Your Honor. Optical circuit includes things other than a PLC. The PLC is the light circuit. And it's for that reason that when the discussion of figure 11 refers to optical paths in the light circuit, it's talking about
optical. But your evidence that light circuit means PLC and instead of optical circuit is what?
The only time the term light circuit comes up, Your Honor, is in connection with the discussion of figure 11. However, the closest other reference to light circuits is with reference to the PLC, which is an acronym for planar light guide circuit. For example, column 2 at about line 48. So this is the only time in the patent where the term light circuit appears as in connection with the PLC and the discussion of figure 11.
So you're saying that this patent, which uses the term PLC probably 100 times and then uses the term light circuit once, when it said light circuit, it meant it's the same thing as the 100 references to PLC?
Yes, Your Honor. Furthermore, in discussing the PLC, the patent indicates that the photolithographic techniques can be used to cast the optical paths within the PLC into desired circuit patterns. So this will be a further indication that when you're talking about a light circuit, you're talking about things that happen in the PLC. And as I say, the board's failure here was in its omission of any consideration with respect to this figure 11 embodiment. And with regard to my friend's reference to a waiver, there was no waiver. The below the indefiniteness argument was addressed. It's also, in fact, addressed in this case. It's simply the case that the written description issues control in both situations.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We thank both sides in the cases.